for the most entertaining talk anywhere. Stay tuned to LA Talk Radio, your real talk station, your real 24 hours of commercial-free programming.
Listening to Critical Mass with Rick Franzi and Doug Feller, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the latest, the 39th installment of Critical Mass, the radio show. I am your host today, Rick Franzi. You're Doug Feller, who hosts the show on Tuesdays, hopefully is listening to the show this afternoon. Recovering from some what we think is minor eye surgery. So, Douglas, if you're listening, I hope as planned. Very excited today. We have two outstanding guests. For our listening audience who have been listening to us since March when Doug and I decided to start the radio show, we do this to help our business owners and listening audience make better, more informed decisions. And we do that by interviewing thought leaders and executives who we believe have transferable knowledge, ideas, and experiences that you will learn from into the interviews. Our two guests today certainly have those experiences, and I'm asking them the questions and learning more about them here on the air. Our radio show is truly an extension of the 15-year business practice where we build executive forums for top executives in Orange County. We do this under the brand Renaissance Executive Forums. And Doug and I currently lead multiple CEO peer groups. Our research indicates that 80% of the issues and opportunities that a top executive or business owner faces are common with those of other top executives and CEOs and business owners who are running similarly sized businesses. In my book, Critical Mass, I talk about the benefits that members derive. I was one, and Doug was one, prior to joining and starting this business, and a CEO peer group. If you're interested in Critical Mass, the 10 explosive powers of CEO peer groups, I highly recommend you go to Amazon.com and buy yourself a copy. If you'd like to learn more about executive forums and the other business ventures that Doug and I are involved in here in Southern California, Orange County, check out our website, Critical Mass for Business. Alrighty, well, let's turn our attention to our first guest. Yeah, I'm excited to have Frank with us today, as he's going to be talking about the challenges and opportunities that he's addressing as the president of Kendon Industries. Frank's been with Kendon Industries since January of this year, and before that, he served as president of Global Motorsport Group, and prior to that, he was president and COO of Tucker Rocky Distributing. Frank's been in the power sport industry for his entire professional career, and more information on Frank can be found at the Kendon website, which is www.kendon, spelled KendonUSA.com. One final note on Frank, he is an active, competitive writer. So, Frank, let's start by maybe giving our listening audience a sense for your path to Kendon Industries.
My path to Kendon Industries came, I was a user of motorcycle transportation of trailer and connected with, which was then now a former executive, then an executive of a division of Tucker Rocky. His name is Bob Kay, and just networked of where I could find an exceptional high-quality trailer and introduced probably 17, 18 homework to be far and above a superior product and didn't even know it. Bought one, used one, and that trailer is still on the road today, and that's how I came to know Kendon. And the path after that was pretty key that if I didn't know about the product, many other people didn't know about it. And the distribution company that I was with, Tucker Rocky, I saw Magnet, as did We brought it 18 years ago as a no other distributor had a product, anything. We immediately took off together and started our relationship and grew the business and rapidly rose to becoming one of the top 10 vendors in that very large company. But Kendon Industries was founded by a gentleman named Kenny Thurm and was really founded on the need by a friend of a friend who really needed a trailer. He was an off-road motorcycle enthusiast and lived in a development that did not allow you to park a trailer outside. And this gentleman constantly was getting ticketed by the Homeowners Association, and that friend of that person knew Kenny Thurm, and Kenny is an accomplished design engineer in the automotive arena, and said, "Kenny, can you help this guy out and make a trailer that the guy could either fold up or store or put in his garage so he'd stop collecting all these fines?" And at that point in time, Kenny Thurm never built a trailer in his life. And after enough coaxing and asking, Kenny obliged him and drew things up and figured one out, and the Kendon fold-up stand-up trailer was born. And that's what differentiated Kendon, was the fact that this was a high-quality trailer with race car heritage, with a chassis designed to be very strong, very lightweight, but yet you could fold this trailer up, stand it on its end, and put it in your garage for storage. And it served the great purpose of high-value, safe transportation of professional racers that needed something that would last over a long period of time and do so reliably, but yet when it wasn't in use, be able to be comfortably and efficiently stored.
So that's interesting that that was his first venture into this industry. And how did he get from that point, Frank, to having a product for sale and beginning to market the product?
The person involved was a person that was a sales and marketing person. That person's name was Don. That person said, "Geez, Kenny, there's a market for these. People will buy these things." And Kenny said, "Do you really think so?" And he says, "Absolutely. People started seeing this thing appear at the races. Where can I get one? Where can I get one?" And that was the formation of Kendon, Kenny, and Don. And they both put some money together and started Kendon. And the Don part took care of the marketing and sales, and the Ken part took care of design, development, and production. And within a year, Kenny bought out his partner and took over sole ownership. And he and his wife is Tina, still very active in the business, started on a campaign through California, north to south, just visiting dealers, showing them the product, and developed a market.
That's interesting. And we're going to get back to Kendon and the products and more about the company in a minute. But before we do that, Frank, I'd like to ask you, of all the things that you've learned in your business life, is there one kind of key lesson learned or guiding principle that you use to run your business?
Yes, there is, and that's having an absolute crystal clear vision of your company and your brand, and have that shared and understood by your employees and the marketplace and all of your valued customers. Inside of Kendon, I use the analogy that, do you want to be Timex or Rolex? And you better be very clear of how you run your company, how you market and brand your company, but you can't be both, but yet they're both very good watches.
In our conversations, you've talked about a laser focus and how you have to keep that focus inside your business. Can you expand a little bit on that as well?
The answer to that is fairly simple, that the difference to corporate culture, and I've had the opportunity and lessons of living in both of those worlds. The corporate culture tends to be, depending upon who owns the cash and who owns the investment. If it's an investment firm and or a hedge fund or something like that, and it's purely corporate, it's just a numbers game. And the only thing meaningful is quarterly profits, fast returns, and what's best for the short-term interest of shareholders to drive the shareholder value up and the stock price up. The fundamental difference there is short-term decisions to drive that type of behavior. They can be good, but many times they have long-term detrimental effects on the business. In a entrepreneurial, privately held, unleveraged business, you tend to see the big picture, make the longer-term, tougher decisions, have the ability make decisions based on the big picture and longer returns and not be very short-sighted, which ultimately can damage your brand.
You have direct experience, Frank, in that, as I said in the open, you've worked for some very large companies and corporations, and you've chosen to work with and lead Kendon Industries. Can you help our audience understand how you made the decision and why you considered leading a firm like Kendon that today is significantly smaller than your previous experience?
I sure can, Rick. The answer to that is service. Who are you serving and for what reason? At Kendon, and there are many companies like Kendon, but certain companies that are privately held, you are serving the people who invested their life savings and their lifeblood into an for me, it's very simple. That's who I want to serve, is people that genuinely have a long-term care and understanding of building value for the motorcycle and power sports industry. The other side of that is the motivation is quite different, and the different culture is that of purely a financial return at sometimes the price of unnecessarily leveraging vendors, customers, possibly decreasing quality to increase profits. And at the end of the day, serving that master is a master who, if the numbers aren't right, will exit and won't be around, and ultimately really don't care that much about whatever industry. They'll move from industry to industry and make whatever investments, mergers, acquisitions, sellouts that basically give them the returns that they need. Moving over to a company like Kendon, and it's not as much as the big to small, but you tend to see this more in a smaller company that are really intimately and personally involved. They have flesh in the game, and they have a long-term view of what's good for their employees and what's good for the customers and their dealers, and that's who I want to serve.
Frank, I would have to believe that you're joining Kendon allows Kenny Thurm to refocus some of his energies because he's an accomplished engineer and designer. Can you elaborate a little bit on that?
I sure. Again, I've known Kenny and Tina for over 18, and my attraction to the company and to them and all of my dealings and the trials and tribulations with each other as professional companies. These are people with unquestioned integrity and significant amount of value. And I was the first phone call when I had left Global was that they saw an opportunity, and so did I. That Cantina called me and said, we need a competent leader with your skill set, with the wisdom of this allow what he does. Kenny would be the first guy to tell you or anyone. He didn't have any intention of building and growing a business or a brand. He loves engineering, design work, inventing, creating innovative ideas. He's the proud owner of a multitude of patents. That's what he does best. And what was happening is his time was eroded by being forced to run this business. This marriage allows the two of us to work in concert with Tina together as a team. Tina runs the business side of the affairs of the company, and Kenny now focuses on the quality of the product, innovating new products, refining the existing product line, and I function on basically the overall leadership and direction and brand management of the company. It's those links of that bring this all other and alchemy world that allows people to do what they're good at. Skill set that Kenny has in his area, and he doesn't have the skill set that I have in my areas. And the magic is Kendon needs both, and by putting the right people together and allowing them to do what they do best or happier, you've got a company moving ahead forward faster. And the other thing is, as one of their vendors, we've seen a very, very big opportunity here that, as we put these pieces together, Kendon has a significant upward growth opportunity.
Frank, I'd like to ask you to give our audience a sense for what you see the future for the power sports industry to look like.
I sure will, Rick. The future of the power sports industry is very bright. I'm very optimistic. The industry is not only going to make a recovery, but it will go back into a growth mode. Our industry will emerge through this very difficult economic time different. It will emerge with some stronger players, and right now we're going through a very challenging time that's going to cause a shakeout of every level of business, from manufacturer to distributor to dealer. And that in itself is not necessarily a bad thing. The market has the opportunity to grow as the appeal for our industry is broad and growing. We appeal to the hardcore enthusiasts that motorcycles aren't just a vehicle, it is a lifestyle. And we know by the numbers of active people riding that is flat to sustaining. New bike sales are definitely significantly down, and that's affecting our industry in a very big way. But people are not stopping the enjoyment and the pleasure of being an active motorcyclist. The thing that's very exciting is, for the first time in America, people are starting to look toward motorcycles as not just recreation, as viable transportation. And as our economy and transportation and the green issue moves forward, motorcycles and scooters and the things that we do have yet a broader appeal. And the other thing is Gen X and Gen Y coming up. We have a product that appeals to the senses. It makes a lot of sense, and it is a lifestyle, and it's a thrilling experience to enjoy the pleasures of motorcycling. So I'm very optimistic, see a very, very bright future for the motorcycle power sports industry.
Well, that's an interesting observation, Frank, and probably one that at a future show we're going to have you back to spend a little bit more time, which is seeing the motorcycle industry transforming into a economical transportation / green friendly industry. That there's a bigger macroeconomics discussion that we can have at some future point. But thank you for raising that onto our attention during this interview. I appreciate it.
Sure.
I'd like to ask you one final question, and that's, is there anything else that I've forgotten to ask you today or neglected to ask you about either you or your organization that you would like to talk about?
I would say the last thing is just about how unique the relationship is with myself and the owners, and it marries right to how unique the products are. The thing that's really unique and special here is the chemistry of design development and really solid values and the opportunity to take a brand that's known and respected and well known for many dealers for over 10, 15 years to a national and international brand that hopefully will be recognized by you and more of your audience as a household name inside the power sports industry. So I believe Kendon is a sleeping giant of brand in the industry in a very unique niche that I hope will be more widely recognized if together we're successful doing what we're trying to do together.
I'm certain that will be the case, knowing the quality of the products that you make, seeing your facility, and as I get to know you with your background experience, Frank, I'm highly confident that we'll have you back in the not-too-distant future talking about the growth of Kendon and how you're, you know, reaching into deeper parts of the power sports industry. So if someone wanted to learn more, Frank, about Kendon, how would someone get in touch with you or learn more about Kendon?
Our website would be the best way, is www.kendonusa, that's K-E-N-D-O-N-U-S-A, no space, .com.
And you mentioned to me that you're going to be in Indianapolis at the first of the year. Do you want to tell us about
that? Yes, the Indianapolis Dealer Expo is actually mid-February, and that's one of the largest motorcycle industry trade shows, and we will proudly be there with our 2010 product offering.
I'd like to thank you for your time this afternoon. I enjoyed the conversation. I do look forward to having you back in the future to talk about a couple of things that we scratched the surface here today during this interview.
Okay, well, Rick, and I'd also like to thank you and Doug and everything that you do with the executive forums. You provide something of value, and I do appreciate it.
Thank you, and have a good day, Frank.
Okay, Rick, thank you.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Turning our attention to our second guest, Rick Rogers. As I said in the press release, I'm excited to have Rick on our show because he's a relatively recent business owner, and he's bringing a fresh and aggressive approach to growing his business, and I believe our listening audience can learn from his approach. Rick's been with Harline Enterprises since 1999, and Rick ultimately bought Harline Enterprises from the previous owner after working in various positions within the firm. If you'd like to get more information on Rick and his firm while we're doing this interview or at a later point, I'd suggest that you check out his website, which is Harline, Harline.net. So, Rick.
Yes.
Are you on the line, my friend?
I'm with you.
Great. You sound great. Why don't you tell our audience about your path to Harline?
My path to Harline. Well, yeah, after being in the wheel industry for 20 years and then out on my own for a while, I decided I wanted to try construction. I was a painter for a while, hated it, and then I got on with Harline. And, you know, Harline did such a wide variety of things. It was a blast, and I immediately fell in love with just basically everything we did. It's just, you know, fast-paced, go, not doing the same thing day in and day out. It's always different, and you know, having to get creative and deal with challenges. It was great.
So you started out doing some jobs at Hardline, but I know from knowing you and talking to people that work in your firm, you also, your natural leadership kind of showed up, right, Rick? I mean, you were given more responsibility and took on more
yeah, as roles. You know, as I wasn't with Hardline, but maybe a few months when I was, you know, promoted up to lead superintendent and, you know, then general and superintendent. It went pretty quick because as we, you know, when I started, there was only a handful of guys. And then as, you know, as I got more involved, we started getting more and more and more people. And naturally, I was just kind of, you know, in charge of all these people and a good portion of the business.
So what is it that Hardline does, Rick?
Well, we do, you know, we're a general contractor, you know, for commercial and industrial properties. You know, we work a lot for property managers. We do just about anything and everything you can imagine, to an existing building. You know, we do our standard TI stuff on the interior. We have painters. We have a cabinet shop in the back. We have electricians. We have plumbers. We have, you know, guys that do concrete and masonry. We have welders, we do structural steel, basically, if you can imagine it, we do it. And I often tell people, if you can't imagine it, tell us what you're looking for, and we'll imagine it and do it for you.
So of all the things you've learned being around Hardline and your various entrepreneurial endeavors before Hardline, Rick, is there one overarching lesson learned or guiding principle that you use to run your business?
Well, I always want to make sure that the customers are satisfied, you know, and you know, they're happy to invite us back. You know, most of our business is repeat customers and word of mouth. So that goes a long way. And also the employees. I do the best I can to take care of the employees and make sure that they're happy and you know, that they get what they need to get by. You know, I don't like to see my guys struggle and I just do the best for my employees, keep them happy, and then they do the same for me.
So you had the opportunity to work in Hardline before you made the decision to buy it. I'm going to ask you a couple questions in this area, but the first one, I guess, is what did you learn from Mike, the previous owner of Hardline?
You know, one of the things that Mike brought on, you know, is he always, you know, when he'd buy a new building and we'd move into it, he always, you know, fixed up the inside and really gave us a nice working environment. You know, and you know, after a while, you just get kind of used to that. It's nice to come to work in a place that looks nice and is clean. You know, and we have janitors come in, you know, three times a week to clean up after us because, you know, we're just a bunch of construction pigs. And, you know, and it's just nice here. You know, we have nice paint, we have nice carpet, and plus it kind of gives us an opportunity to show off what we do. And also, you know, we like to go in and work with customers to kind of, you know, if we can show them what we do in our own offices. You know, we had a customer that with a very popular green cleaning products company here in Orange County, and you know, their president wanted his office to look like the captain's quarters on a pirate ship, and so we went in and we sat down and we talked to him and kind of went over his theme and explain to him what we could do and what, you know, kind of what the costs were. And really to do what he wanted was pretty pricey. But we came up with a happy medium and came in and did some fake beams and distressed those beams. You know, we got done. It looked pretty darn cool. So the opportunity to get creative, it's a good thing.
Well, you also have an interesting philosophy. As we were talking, you mentioned that, and I was in one of your conference rooms, which has a very beautiful ceiling that you've installed there. But can you talk a little bit about how important a ceiling is in a building?
Yes. Glad you brought that up, because I really learned that, you know, a lot of people, you know, they paint, put down carpets, but they don't want to spend the money on the ceilings. And, you know, when you do the ceiling work, it really makes everything else pop. You know, if you were to do the ceilings before the floor, the walls would look way better, and you may not feel you want the flooring. You know, it's I always think the ceilings are an important item.
Rick, we know that you worked at Hardline before you made the decision to buy it, and one question that interests me is, do you remember the day that you walked through the door and you no longer were an employee, but you were an owner of the company? And if you do, Rick, can you share with our audience, did you feel different? Was it different? Did people treat you different? Was it what you expected? You know, just a general sense. What was that initial first day like?
Huh. I didn't really give it a whole lot of thought. It was just, you know what? I've always just been that kind of employee where I enjoy my work and I just put my heart and soul into what I do. You know, and really doing this whole thing, you know, the roads I've been down, it's just like, you know, I didn't need a whole lot to get by. Money wasn't my driver. It really still isn't. It's, you know, enjoying life and just enjoying what you do. I mean, you gotta love what you do or it just makes life, you know, not so pleasant, you know, and so, you know, taking over, I don't really remember feeling any different about the transition. You know, as far as the guys were concerned, I was their boss anyway, so it really wasn't much different for them. You know, some of the customers, they do treat me a little bit different, but, you know, some of them will actually give me a little bit more time to sit down and talk rather than, you know, them blow me off. But other than that, of course it was exciting, but I don't really remember a whole lot of change.
Well, that means you were probably well suited for it and it came naturally to you. So that's great. You know, I enjoy talking with you and listening and learning about your approach to your business and how you plan to grow it. And you have done significantly well in doing that so far. And I'm totally confident that you and the team there will continue to get new revenue growth. One of the things that you've mentioned to me as a part of your growth strategy is that you've agreed to follow a major client as they move out of the state of California into another state. And could you explain to our audience a little bit about your thinking behind that as a growth strategy?
Okay. Well, this major client, they're not really moving out of state. They already have a facility in that state, but they're going to expand there. And I figure why not? You know, we currently do work for a national retail stores, you know, through a separate entity that manages their work, and they just call us in different states. We've talked about doing some out of state work. You know, to go out of state and get a license there isn't really a huge deal. You know, I know a lot of, you know, my major competitor in that state is a union contractor, which I'm not. I think, you know, I can do it cheaper. Plus, I'm pretty much on board with what their wants and needs are. You know, we've been doing work there for 14 years, so we're pretty much in tune with what they require.
Okay, and I didn't want to misspeak. Thanks for putting a finer point on the fact that your client is already there, but they're looking to expand. That's interesting because, you know, as we had talked, doing multi-state work, while it fits your model as well, because you talked about you have the retail maintenance work that you do for national retail chains and that there's an intermediary that could take advantage, I guess, of your services in more locations by you going to a multi-state approach, it does bring on more challenges for you inside your business because you're now in various states with various regulations. So I applaud your growth strategy in that specific area because I think it shows your willingness to continue to grow your business with your existing clients. But you also have an interesting strategy for longer term growth of Heartland Enterprises beyond what we just talked about. And maybe you could, you know, talk a little bit about the work that's going on inside your firm as the foundation for future growth.
Sure. We, you know, right now there's a lot of good people out of work, you know, and I've been bringing on project managers, you know, some of them that are college educated. They're in tune with the paper contracting game, you know, all the, you know, the reports and just, it's just a different way of contracting. Most of Hardline, we're self-performing. You know, we do it, a lot of it in-house. The paper contracting game just, you know, gets you into a different realm. So we're bringing in people that are capable of doing that. You know, we're getting used to what they do. They're getting used to what we do. You know, and I'm also bringing in some of the crew, some of the guys out in the field. Every time we hire, man, we hire 10 guys and 9 of them are really good. So, you know, we're trying to get them in place. We're working, on solar certification. We're getting LEED certified. I'm picking up, independent licenses like the plumbing license. We have the electrical license already. So, you know, I'm getting, and I will get the solar license, you know, once we get the solar certification, and we'll, you know, we'll just keep picking up the, you know, the individual licenses that, you know, that some of the people are looking for to help us expand. So, I know right now, you know, a lot of the big boys, the $100 million companies are, you know, I'm bidding against these guys on a regular basis, you know, and these are jobs that when times are good, they wouldn't bat an eye at it, you know, they wouldn't even look at it. So, you know, I'm trying to get myself in position to when things get busy and these guys go away, it's a natural step for us to just, we'll be there. People have heard of us. You know, hopefully we've bid enough and got enough of those jobs to where they have a little bit more confidence in us, and we'll be in position to grow with the economy when it gets there.
So I have to imagine that hiring good people, going through the certification process, getting licenses for out of state work, picking up new licensings for different specialties like plumbing, etc., within your industry. There's got to be a cost implication to the current business at Hardline Enterprises, Rick. Could you spend a minute and talk about maybe how, you know, the short-term impact that you're dealing with?
Really, I think the only short-term impact I'm dealing with is occasionally, you know, cash flow gets to be kind of a pain. You know, all of these guys, you know, if I've got 7 project managers and 4 of them are usually busy, so I've got 3 that are kind of idle, but they're doing a lot of bidding, and they're able to jump in and help some of the other project managers. So, you know, when the times come along that all 7 of them are busy, you know, it kind of beats on me a little bit, fill in their pipeline, but it's, you know, it's just something that we work through. Most of our, you know, we've been with a lot of our vendors for a long time, and they're patient with us. So, you know, it gets down the road. You know, we've been growing steadily since I've taken over, and so we're always doing more and more and more. So it's not really a big deal.
But this is, while you're a humble business owner, and I appreciate that about you, Rick, the reality is the strong competitors use times like this to build a stronger foundation, and you sort of alluded to it, such that when the economy turns and the business is there, it's going to be a stronger, more diversified, multifaceted Hardline Enterprises to take advantage of a growing market. And so you are taking time to invest in your business with the expectation that you're going to get a significant return. And I think that's really exciting, because I believe that's what's going to fuel probably even more growth than you've seen up to this point, when it's a little easier to get some of the newer jobs that are coming on, and there are more new jobs. So I'm excited by what you and the team have done there, Todd and the other people in your firm, to kind of build a stronger Hardline Enterprises. Which gives me the right to ask you, what is your view for the near term and the little longer term construction industry here in Orange County? What do you see happening?
Well, with the near term being like the fourth quarter of this year, you know, it's typical for us, because we work for a lot of property managers and facilities that, you know, they're on a budget. You know, if they haven't spent it, they need to spend it by the end of the year. So things will probably pick up a little bit for us between now and the end of the year. And then, you know, long term, you know, I think I talk with a lot of architects and engineering firms that, you know, they're doing a lot of the front end legwork. They're getting a lot more inquiries. People are kind of looking, saying, well, you know, what is this feasible? What's going to go on here? How does this happen? So, there's a lot of people looking. I think there's, a lot of these people are still a little bit shy and a little bit scared. Don't want to really jump out there until they feel more comfortable with the economy. I believe it's out there, but I think it's probably a year and a half, 2 years away yet before it really breaks, you know, on the commercial side.
And when it comes back, do you think it'll look like it was before it went away, or do you think it will be different?
No, I think when it comes back, it'll probably be a little bit, it'll come back slower than it went away. You know, kind of went away kind of quick. But I think coming back, it'll go slow, and I think more people are going to want to get confidence before they start cutting loose.
Interesting. Rick, we're kind of running sort of towards the end of the interview. I just wanted to ask, is there anything that we didn't cover today or I didn't think to ask you that you'd like to talk about, either about you or Harline Enterprises? Or?
One thing, you know, that I'm really, you know, thrilled with, you know, is the, you know, the guys I work with, you know, my guys, they are, you know, they're the kind of employee that I always was. They're hardworking, they're loyal, they're dedicated. I can't think of, you know, one guy that really is here to collect a paycheck. You know, they're happy to be here. They love what they do. They don't cry and complain. You know, we work days, nights, weekends, whatever the customer needs. You know, working in occupied spaces, you don't always get to go in when you want. And, you know, my guys are just there. They're happy to do it. You know, they're just a happy bunch of guys. We have a blast. I just, guys to work with. You know, and a lot of them are well-versed. You know, I've got one guy that has an A contractor's license, which means, you know, if we really wanted to, we could build bridges and high rises. But, you know, I got a couple of guys that still have their own B license, but I don't think that they're, you know, when things get good, they're not going to run away because they're just having too much fun here, which is, you know, I just love that. And it just gives us a great opportunity. And I think it shows in the way we deal with customers, and, you know, hopefully the customers enjoy us as much as we enjoy them.
Well, it's clear from this interview, for people who may not know you as well as I do and others that know you, that you are what you're saying. You do value enjoying what you do, and that's a consistent theme that I've heard from you for the time that I've known you. So you're to be commended on that, and I think that's a, you know, we talk about transferable learning events for our listening audience. They're not all just about the business. They are about how to approach it as well, and I think you're attitude about enjoying what you're doing and make work fun is a good lesson for people to learn that may be listening to this interview. So thank you for that.
Well, thanks, Rick.
One last time, if someone wants to get in touch with you or they want to learn more about Harline Enterprises, how do they do that?
We have a website. It's www.harline, H-A-R-L-I-N-E, .net. And they're welcome to call me anytime, 714-751-0274.
Well, there
you go. Be happy to help them with whatever they need.
All right, my friend. Again, I want to thank you for the time that you've taken today to speak with our audience. I appreciate you carving this time out of your busy schedule, and I've enjoyed the half hour that we've had here on the radio together, and look forward to bringing you back, Rick, next year and getting an update on how Harline Enterprises is progressing, okay?
Okay, hopefully we can tell everything worked out. Thanks, Rick. It was a blast.
Thanks, Rick. Talk to you again soon. Bye.
All right.
Well,
bye.
That ends this installment of Critical Mass, the radio show. I hope you've enjoyed the show today. I did. I enjoyed both of our guests. And as you know, Doug and I are all about helping our listening audience make better, more informed decisions. And if you'd like to learn more about Renaissance Executive Forums and the other business interests that Doug and I have here in Orange County, California, check out our wonderful website at www.criticalmassforbusiness.com. Until next week, I hope that all your decisions move your company in a positive direction.
You're listening to Critical Mass with Rick Franzi and Doug